You are Locked On Angels, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Angels, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, your 2018 Angels. Welcome to Locked On Angels.
Keep it locked.
Locked on.
We're locked on, sir.
Locked On Angels.
What up, Angel fans? My name is Lucas Sardo, your host of Locked On Angels. Today, I'm the resident social cynic, and I'd like to welcome you to your daily Angels update here on Locked On Angels, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. And guys, I'm coming to you on the road today, a little road trip for me. I'm in Bishop, California. Currently no internet connection, so posting this might be a little bit of a mission, but I'm here for you. I'm here for you because this is your last episode of the regular season before we wind down and start talking 2018 recap and looking more into the future for 2019. I just happened to find the one hotel here that you have to call the front desk for the Wi-Fi password, but they don't have a phone in the room, and I don't have service on my cell phone, so I can't Google their number to call from my phone. Mix that with the fact that I am too lazy to walk to the front desk right now. So we're going a little old school. We are unconnected. We are disconnected from the internet. Also, no golf channel in this room, so I can't even watch the Ryder Cup. What's going on with this hotel? What is going on? Absolute, just wow. Anyway, let's talk Angels baseball. We're entering Friday, getting ready for a series with the Oakland Athletics. This series actually means absolutely nothing for the Angels, but it actually means something for the A's, because if they get the sweep in Anaheim and the Yankees fail to win a game against the Boston Red Sox, the A's would actually be the first wild card and host that wild card game, which I think would be a little bit more fun than a game in New York. But looking at this series, I mean, are we going to try to play spoiler? I hope so. We have to win one game to be able to do that. And I think our best chance is on Friday when Jaime Barria takes the mound. We talked briefly about Barria, but for him to have a 10-9 record, 3.54 ERA this season, I think is very overlooked. I think Barria has been our best starter by far. Stayed healthy all season long. And like I said, I think we could essentially spoil that party for Oakland with Barria on the mound. He goes up against 12-7 Mike Fiers, who owns a 3.31 ERA. After that, I mean, you're going to get another installment of Tyler Skaggs, who may be nursing that tough loss from his beloved Minnesota Vikings to the Rams on Thursday. Let's hope he gets a little chip on his shoulder after that loss that the Vikings took. But honestly, Skaggs has looked a lot like the Minnesota Vikings this season, his favorite football team. The similarities, not a lot of consistency between both. A lot of injuries, huge underperformances this season, and ultimately just a letdown. Hopefully Skaggs can turn it around. Not necessarily going to root for the Vikings, but I don't know. After Skaggs, the Angels are going to send Felix Pena to the mound to be the starter for Mike Socha's last game as a manager in Anaheim. But I'm not really expecting much from the Angels this weekend. I mean, we're out of it. I think ultimately the A's will dominate. Maybe we'll get one of the three. But let's transition. I'm going to do makeshift Wild West Friday, kind of talk about what we're looking at going into these playoffs, kind of talk about the, you know, whole scope of what we're looking at in baseball.
West side!
Yo, it's Wild West Wednesday.
Yeah.
Let's take a trip around the West.
So this season was a wash for the Angels. It's sad considering the way we started the season, and I think even around the All-Star break when the Angels were about eight back, there was an idea surrounding the team. I know with myself, I was getting the trying to get the hashtag trending. We can try to put it together, get that same team that we started the season with, and basically make a St. Louis Cardinals-esque run towards a playoff berth. Because I think even if the Angels were in a position that the Cardinals were one game out with the final wild card spot going into the last part of the season, I think we'd be happy, right? That being said, the AL was so top-heavy this season. To put it in perspective, the Yankees, who are going to be your number one wild card, probably, could win 100 games this season and still finish 8 games back of the Red Sox, who won the division. That's absolutely absurd. The A's are going to win at least 96 games and be the second wild card. If you want to know how good the East and West were, the AL East and West were this season, if Oakland was in the Central, they would be leading the division by 7 games currently. The Mariners would be 3 games back of the Indians in that division. So talk about just an ultra-competitive, top-heavy American League. And it's completely countered by the fact that the NL, where we don't even know who the playoff teams are going to be in, like the AL, NL West, and coming down to the wire with the last wild card spot, which is absolutely crazy. So going into next season, the idea really has to be, what do we have to do to turn into a 90-win team? Because that's the difference maker in our season. And is it going to be the fact that we blew 26 wins on saves? We blew 26 saves. I know I said that kind of weird. Let me rephrase it. The Angels blew 26 saves this season. That was, I think, it was like 4th in all of Major League Baseball and 2nd in the AL. So let's just play the hypothetical game, right? We don't blow 26 saves this year. That means we currently have 104 wins right now. And I know we're not gonna not blow 0 saves in a season. Like, that's just ridiculous. But let's say 15 to 17 blown saves on the year. Like Oakland, who has one of the best bullpens in baseball, in my opinion, they blew 17 this year. Okay? So you blow 10 less saves, let's say. Let's say we blow 16 next year. Or this year, we did. We're an 88-win team. Looking at 90 wins, that's a successful season. Not to mention who those blown saves were against, being Oakland, being the Astros, the Mariners, right? Division games that matter, ultimately. So, is the bullpen still the problem? I don't know. I personally don't think so. I don't think we'll be 2nd in the AL and 4th in all of baseball and blown saves next year. But because we'll have a guy like Ty Buttrey out there throwing the 9th instead of like Blake Parker. And our bullpen was really just atrocious all season long. So I think our solution's going to have to come from the starting pitchers. I mean, it's been well documented that the Angels starters had difficulty all year long, going late into games especially. And even if they just pitch into the 6th or 7th more consistently, I think it takes a little bit more pressure off of our bullpen. So the idea being, just get me to the 6th, right? Because next year we will have guys to throw the 7th, 8th, and 9th all season long, I think. I don't think the bats are going to be a problem. And defensively, the team has performed well this season. So I don't want to beat a dead horse, but the pitching just has to be better to compete with the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Astros, the A's, even the Mariners, right? And those are the teams we have to chase right now. Those are the teams that we're looking up to. Those are the teams that ultimately dominated us all season long. I think between the Yankees and the Red Sox, the Angels won like 3 games or something ridiculous like that. They might not have even won a game against the Red Sox this year too, so I mean, how do we expect to be a playoff team when we can't beat playoff teams? It's frustrating. But I believe in Billy Epler, which is why I am officially starting a new hashtag for the Angels right now. If you remember at the All-Star break, it was hashtag it could happen. We are switching. So whenever you tweet at me, you tweet at Jared Timms, Stu Matthews, Brett McGuire, Jeff Fletcher, any of them. Okay, you're adding the hashtag be a believer. Okay, check the spelling on Twitter too. I mean, it'll be also in the title of this podcast. Hashtag be a believer, believer, B-I-L-L-Y-V-E-R. Because we believe in Billy Epler, right? I was going to do believe, like B-I-L-L-I-E-V-E. But the Buffalo Bills use that. So we are going to be different. And we are going to be believers. Okay? We're trusting the process, which the Philadelphia 76ers did. We are believers. Might have to make t-shirts with that. That might be a good idea. But I trust what this guy is doing. And I think a lot of people, a lot of fans, a lot of people around the organization trust what Billy Epler is doing. And I'm excited. This guy wants to win. I'm a believer. Are you a believer? We'll see. We're going to transition to our Friday mailbag questions. We got three sick questions from one listener that we're going to dive into. But first, if you want to sponsor the podcast, you know where to hit us up, lockedonangels@gmail.com. So coming up next, Friday mailbag questions. Time to get into our Friday mailbag questions. So we got three absolutely sick questions from listener Dalton Hall. And shout out to Dalton. Like I said, these questions are freaking awesome. Keep those kind of questions coming. So, three questions. I'm going to try to get through them kind of quick because they're kind of lengthy. But number one, looking at the Astros and the Indians rotation, which one do you think is better and why? The Indians are having a sneaky good season when everyone seems to be on the Astros train. How did they build the player by player, and how can the Angels construct a similar rotation? Do we have any pieces yet? Realistically, not fantasy. First part of the question, Indians or Astros rotation. I've said it before. I think there's not a question that the Astros have a better rotation. Don't have a starter that's has a below a 500 record this season. Their highest ERA is from Lance McCullers right now, and it's 3.9. That's ridiculous, right? And he's only pitched 23 games, I understand, but 3.9 is their highest ERA in their starting rotation. Let's not overlook the fact that these guys are battle-tested from last season and can not just pitch in big games, but dominate big games. You counter that with the Indians, I think for them, I agree, a very sneaky year for them, and nobody has talked about them nearly enough. Trevor Bauer was having a Cy Young caliber year until he got hurt. I think Corey Kluber's name could wiggle his way into the Cy Young conversation, and you're getting career years from Carlos Carrasco, and nobody was expecting anything. I wasn't. I don't think, I never met a person that was like, hey, Mike Clevenger, he's going to be absolutely dominant this season. But like I said, the thing that this team, everybody except maybe Corey Kluber, is having career years. We haven't seen elongated periods of this rotation's dominance. Plus, you put these two rotations in a seven-game series, right? With the Astros, you're getting Verlander, Keuchel, Gerrit Cole for those seven games with a potential Lance McCullers game four. Dominance. The Indians match up with their four. I don't think it's as scary to face as that rotation that the Astros have. Just on name alone, right? I'll also say that on a full rotation basis, these fifth starters might not come into play for the postseason, at least for the Indians. I don't think they were. I don't think you're going to have Shane Bieber and Adam Pluto for the Indians, who have ERAs north of 4.5. The Astros have Charlie Morton, who only has a 15-3 record with a 3.18 ERA. So, I mean, the Astros have a legitimate five-headed monster that they can take into that playoffs. I've talked to certain people about just, you know, this Astros team going into the playoffs. I mean, they could essentially just go like Verlander for three, Keuchel for three, and then send it to the bullpen. And then Gerrit Cole for three, McCullers for three, and then throw it to the bullpen. And then, you know, like Charlie Morton sprinkled in there. And then they could pitch every other game. Like it's absurd what this team could do. And then you have the quick hook where, like, if Verlander's in trouble in the second, you can throw Charlie Morton in there to get to the third inning and then bring in Keuchel. It's absurd how much range they can have with that pitching staff. It's something that I think is very, very, you know, it's something the Angels want, right? It's envious, but I will say, I think the Astros are going to win the World Series. I think the Astros are going to win the World Series. Whatever. Anyway, translate that to the Angels. You have to have... I'm sorry. Let's back up. Part two to this question. How do the Angels develop these pitching staffs? I skipped over my notes, so sorry. I'm trying to scroll. It's a mess. Anyway, Verlander, Charlie Morton, Gerrit Cole, all acquired. Verlander and Morton through free agency. Gerrit Cole, they traded for him. If you ask Trevor Bauer, he'll tell you there's some kind of witchcraft going on in Houston because their spin rates magically increased once they got to Houston. Does that have anything to do with it? I'm not sure. Maybe a little bit, but I don't know. They're all still dominant pitchers in this league. Lance McCullers and Dallas Keuchel were both drafted by the team, came up through the system, great pitchers in their right mind. And I think that's the way most teams build a successful rotation. You're not going to hit on every single one of your pitching prospects. You're not going to have a five-man rotation that came up through your organization. Like, that just does not happen, right? You look, so the Astros hit on two of their prospects, right? Signed the rest of them or traded for them. You translate that to the Angels. Which ones have we hit on? Which ones have we flopped on? Garrett Richards, at one point, was probably considered a hit. Turned to flop. Matt Shoemaker, same thing. Andrew Heaney, same thing. Tyler Skaggs, basically the same thing, even though we traded him, then we got him back. Parker Bridwell, last year, we thought we hit on him. He flopped. Right now, we're high on Jaime Barria. Is that going to flop? I hope not. But who knows? The benefit of acquiring pitchers through free agency is that you know what the guy is worth. You always have a huge sample size of what they can do at the major league level, and you know if they're necessarily good or not. Don't get me wrong. There's duds. See CJ Wilson. But I think generally, you know what you're going to get out of these guys. And you want to know what's funny? The one prospect that we had that is now excelling where we traded him, Sean Newcomb. And I think the last, like, Griffin Canning kind of prospect that we were like, oh my gosh, he's the next big thing. However, I will say I am not mad about that trade because I think Andrelton Simmons is absolutely worth it. I still think we won that trade. Sean Newcomb, Eric Ibar for Andrelton Simmons. I think we won that trade. So, I don't know if we realistically have the pieces to make that rotation happen. Obviously, we need people in free agency. We've talked about it enough. But do we have two or three other starters that really fill the rest of that rotation? A lot of people are high on Griffin Canning. I'm not particularly high on him. But you look at what we have. Do you see go out and get two better starters and we have three guys that can be around them and be a good rotation? I don't know. I mean, I like Heaney a lot. I like Barria. I've always liked Matt Shoemaker. Skaggs, I don't really know how I feel about him yet. But these guys can't stay healthy. And that's another thing that we would need out of them. So, realistically, do we have the pieces right now? I'm leaning no. I'm leaning no. I want to see what Griffin Canning has because I think that's maybe piece number one. I think we have a half a piece in Andrew Heaney. If he can stay healthy, which he's done a good job at this year, but I don't know. Let's transition to question number two. He asks, people have been floating around Mike Trout getting a $500 million contract, just skipping the number 400. And he approves. But how would this most likely be constructed? Years, average value, opt-out clauses, obvious no-trade clauses, etc. Gotta love the Mike Trout questions. I love them. So yeah, I think the number is going to be based off of Bryce Harper, Manny Machado. But $500 million I don't think is out of the question. I've said before, I think you start at $400 million and then you work from there. Now, that being said, let's get into what my contract for Mike Trout would look like. If we're using the number $500 million, I think you go 50 years, and I don't think that's a bad idea, because the average value of that works out to $10 million a year. And I'm going to get into some sneaky things I would do with this contract, but the reason I would do that is because it gives you monies to still work with around him. You can still build that team around him. You're not handcuffed like we are with a guy like Albert Pujols and stuff like that. And I don't think the idea is that absurd. I don't think it's that out of the question. And also, you look at like Pujols' case, right? You're paying him $26, $27, $28 million a year, respectively, over the next years. And he's just not worth that, right? And when Trout is closer to 40 than he is to 25, I think we can all agree he's probably not going to be the Mike Trout we see right now, but $10 million a year is still going to be worth what he is worth, right? This year, or next year and the years following that, the first, I'd say, 6 years of the contract, $10 million a year, yeah, you're steal. Absolute steal. But after that, I think it maybe might be worth that, right? But again, if he wants to win, it doesn't handcuff the team. I think you also throw in a no-trade clause, obviously. Not that anybody would really take that contract necessarily, but I think the no-trade clause would be more for the fans and Mike's own job security more than anything. If the deal is that long, also, I don't think Trout would agree to any club options because that would just kind of screw him in the end. But I think what you could potentially see, and it would, I think, entice him, is you have some player options. So what I would do is you have a player option after year 6, another one after year 7, and another one after year 8. He gets a player option. So he can walk away from this contract at any time after the 6th, 7th, or 8th year. I think that would pique his interest because he would still be young enough to, and you know, he's Mike Trout, obviously, to go get an absolutely huge contract somewhere else. And if he's done what he wants to do in Anaheim, he might walk away and try to go get more money on a per-year basis. That makes sense for him, right? But if we put those player options in, I think you backload the contract to incentivize him to stay after that 8th year, right? So if your annual average value of the contract is about $10 million for the entirety of the contract, I think in the first 8 years, those first 8, your average value is about $6 million or something like that to kind of give him an incentive to stay long-term. So, I don't know. I've said it on here. I think you sign him long-term to basically that lifetime contract. And when he decides to stop playing, you ask him to stick around and coach. Or you say, hey, you know what? Thanks for playing. Go enjoy retirement for a couple years. But we'd love to have you back here as a coach. We'd love to have you as a special, assistant to the GM or something like that. I don't think that's out of the question. I don't think he's going to step away from baseball altogether. So I think paying him long-term isn't necessarily a bad thing. I mean, we give him the contract, and 70-year-old Lucas is going to be like, oh, geez, why are we still paying Mike Trout? Like, it was great while it lasted, but now I hate it. But I don't know. I think right now it makes sense for what the team wants to do. We'll see. Question number 3, final question for the day. He asks, I don't know how much you know about Adam Ottavino. And when he had his Tommy John surgery, the Rockies extended his contract anyway because they knew his value. Why won't the Angels do that with Garrett Richards? Move him to the pen 1 year once he's back. Look how valuable Adam is now with his low-cost, high-reward contract. We could use that, couldn't we? For the listeners that don't know, Adam Ottavino, reliever for the Rockies this year, has been absolutely lights out this season. 2.47 ERA in his 74 appearances out of the bullpen. Adam Ottavino had Tommy John back in 2015, missed the entirety of that season, but the Rockies took that chance on him, kept him in the bullpen. Now he's tearing it up. A lot of similarities also between both these guys, Garrett Richards and Adam Ottavino. Both been in the league 8 seasons. Adam Ottavino had his surgery in his age 29 season. Garrett Richards will be having his surgery, or had his surgery, age 30 season. Here's the difference, though. Ottavino has had only one major injury, and that was his elbow, right? Had the Tommy John, now he's back, he's fine. Let's not forget that 2 years ago, Garrett Richards missed a season with a UCL problem, underwent stem cell treatment for it. He returned, and then, well, that was 3 seasons ago, I guess, now. Then the last season, 2017, missed the entire year with a bicep problem, and now missed this season with another UCL problem. So he hasn't pitched a full season for the Angels since 2015. You look at Adam Ottavino, the only season he missed was that Tommy John surgery year. So Garrett Richards, he's riddled with injuries. And also, you had the knee surgery also that year when that happened. So he's missed a lot of time for this team. I don't know if you really give him a contract to come back out of the pen. I mean, if you do it, maybe a minor league contract? Because you also got to think he's missing all of next season. He's basically going to be Shohei Ohtani next year without the DH. But I don't know. Maybe give him a minor league contract to work him out once he gets back. See if he's got it. I definitely don't bring him back as a starter because we've seen that he can't handle that. I mean, he's got the good power stuff, and I think he can get guys out. It would be good out of a bullpen. You can always use power arms out there. But they talked about it earlier. I don't think we have many question marks surrounding our bullpen. I think we've kind of solidified the pieces out there, and we have a lot of team control over those guys for a long time. So to answer the question, I don't think it's a necessity to bring him back. If they gave him anything more than, like I said, a minor league contract, I'd be pretty upset, considering we're trying to pay that Trout guy. So, I mean, I think it's interesting to consider, but I don't think when Garrett Richards comes back, he is going to be Adam Ottavino. Let's put it that way. Those are the questions we had today. We had one more from Mike on Twitter. He asked if we were going to give Jared Goff a contract to pitch out of our bullpen. Maybe. I don't know. Seems to be doing pretty well in that football thing, but that was a fun question. But anyway, we're going to come back and close out the season and the show with one last trivia question for you guys. We'll be right back. All right, that was an absolutely loaded show that we had today. A lot of baseball talk. I like it, considering this. You know, the Angels haven't really been a part of the conversation for a while. But one last trivia question for this regular season. And the question is, in the Angels-specific Triple Crown race, Mike Trout will lead the team in two of the three Triple Crown categories. Which category is he not leading in? And who leads in that statistic? That is your last trivia question. Tweet it at me. I'm really considering making those Be a Believer shirts. So maybe if we start getting some trivia questions right, we start handing out some shirts. Maybe throw up some designs on the Twitter page. We'll see. I think it'd be fun. Anyway, that's all I have for you guys today. We'll be back next week with a couple new episodes to close out the season. I want to be completely transparent with you guys. I'm in Bishop for this wedding. I'm returning. I'm supposed to be returning on Monday, so, barring any weird circumstances. So if I do end up driving home on Monday, I might not have a podcast out for you guys that day. It might end up being out Tuesday, and maybe we'll go Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday next week before we transition to once a week. But keep an eye on our Twitter for all the updates regarding the show. So, guys, that is all I have for you today. My name is Lucas Sardo. You can find me at LucasSardo13 on my personal Twitter page, but also go to our show's Twitter page at Locked On Angels for all our updates. You can also go to our website, LockedOnAngels.com, and if you have any other questions or comments or answers to trivia questions, go to our email. Shoot me an email, LockedOnAngels@gmail.com. That is all for today. Go Halos, number one. Hashtag Be a Believer, number two. Adios, number three.